We'll hear argument first this morning in case 12-1184, Octane Fitness versus Icon Health and Fitness Incorporated. Mr. Telscher.
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the Court, an exceptional case under Section 285 requires a court to assess the full range of traditional equitable considerations, including the degree of reasonableness of the merits by the plaintiff's action, procedural aspects of the case, and evidence of economic coercion. Frivolous and bad faith cases are not prerequisites to an award of fees under Section 285. The Federal Circuit's test conflicts with the statutory language, it violates established canons of statutory construction, and it deprives district courts of the discretion they need to effectively combat abusive patent litigation practices. Below, the Federal Circuit found that ICON's claims require a C-channel structure and that ICON's claim construction to the contrary was without merit, appendix at A-10. The Federal Circuit also affirmed the district court's grant of summary judgment that no reasonable juror could find as a matter of law that Octane's structure had an equivalent to the C-channel, appendix A-13. This means that ICON's infringement allegations against Octane were meritless. This fact, in combination with other undisputed evidence of record, namely the worthless nature of the patent, evidence of economic coercion, and the fact that two other elements of the claimed, the core elements of the claim, were missing as well, make this case exceptional. And it's such that this court should reverse the district court and award fees on its own.
You were talking about economic coercion. Suppose it were reversed. Suppose that Octane had the patent and sued ICON. Would the analysis be precisely the same?
The analysis would be primarily the same. The evidence of economic coercion may be less. So, for example, if you're a smaller competitor and you're suing a larger competitor, there would be less opportunity for abuse. Knowing if ICON was the competitor with the weak patent, they would know that their larger competitor would stand up to him. So the opportunity for economic abuse would be less.
I've been listening to your adjectives. This is a search for adjectives in part. I think you used the word meritless. Is there a difference between meritlessness and objectively baseless?
I don't know that the case law is perfectly clear. In Christiansburg, this court did define meritless to the tune of it's unjustified and without foundation.
Because if we remand to the district court's already said it's not objectively baseless, it's not brought in bad faith. I'm not quite sure what words we're going to give to the district court if you're to prevail.
You had just said that we should return it to the district court with orders to require fee shifting. And how could that be if the discretion is to be exercised by the district court? I can understand you're asking for a remand. I can't understand you're asking for a reversal and an order that fees be reimbursed.
We understand the tension between a discretionary standard and asking for a remand with a finding. However, there are cases that are rare. Not that rare, but they're rare enough where appellate courts look at a record and have a firm and definite conviction that an award should be made such that it would be an abuse of
discretion.
Do you think
this court is the proper court to look at the record and make that determination that the district court got it wrong when the district court didn't think this was an exceptional case?
On this record, yes, Your Honor. The Federal Circuit's finding is such that the infringement claim is meritless. As a matter of law, the claim construction position had no possibility of success under 35 U.S.C. Section 112, paragraph F.
What do you want to add to meritless? Don't you have to add something to meritless? I mean, every time you win a summary judgment motion, that's a determination that the claim is without merit, isn't it?
It is not, Your Honor.
Doesn't meritless just mean without merit?
No. For example, in most patent cases, there is the Markman phase. So a district court judge, as a matter of law, is required to find on the claim construction. So there could be a reasonable dispute about the meaning of a term that's resolved against the plaintiff. So it just because they lose a claim construction doesn't mean their position was meritless.
Okay, I understand. Well, all right. What must be added to the word meritless?
In our strong view.
No reasonable judge could have found it to be with merit?
If someone brings a claim construction position that's unreasonably weak, in our view, that qualifies under Section 285 and is consistent with the words that other cases.
That's not a standard. I would want to, you know, you realize how differently various district courts would operate if you just say, what was your phrase, unreasonably weak?
And yet,
you've got to give me something tighter than that.
That is the standard, however, that this court used in Martin and in Pierce. And if we're looking at, if we want to make, for example, in most of these cases, what we're talking about is going to typically involve the merits. And so if we say that the only way you can get a fee award is to have a zero-merit frivolous case, it's impossible to show. It's inconsistent with the statutory language. So when we're looking at this from a statutory context, on the merits, what should qualify? And there comes a point at which a case goes from strong to medium, and it crosses into the territory of weak. It gets weaker and weaker, and then it becomes frivolous. This Court, even in Pierce, recognized that the reasonableness standard was something more than frivolous. And we think if Section 285 is to have any teeth in deterring the abusive practices currently in the system, something more than frivolousness is required, and it is consistent with this Court's prior precedent.
We're dealing with a term that could be read in many different ways, exceptional, right? Maybe that means 1 out of 100. Maybe it means 10 out of 100. And why shouldn't we give some deference to the decision of the Court that was set up to develop patent law in a uniform way? They have a much better idea than we do about the consequences of these fee awards in particular cases. And since we're just, as Justice Kennedy pointed out, dealing with adjectives, you know, meritless, frivolous, exceptional, why don't we give some deference to their judgment?
Well, I think we need to look at the basis of the judgment, which is grounded in the fact that they found constitutionally that the PRE standard was required. And I think this Court's precedent in BE and K just 2 years earlier says that the validity of fee-shifting statutes is not governed by the PRE standard. And if the Court were to so hold, that would throw into question all of the fee statutes of this country, because accordingly, they presumptively would have to have the sham litigation test to be constitutional.
What is the difference between the Federal Circuit's use of objectively meritless and your standard?
I know that
you've been arguing that they shouldn't be using subjective intent, so I'm putting that aside. And you can tell me why Kilopass doesn't answer that now, but what's the difference you see?
To my way of thinking, when you say meritless or baseless, it means there's absolutely no foundation. It's zero merit. When we talk about objectively unreasonable, and again, as this Court found in Pierce, it suggests something lesser than frivolousness. And the reality of, I think, of district court litigation is it's near impossible to show that something's frivolous, that somebody had no argument.
I don't understand your answer to the question. How does the first part of the Federal Circuit's test differ from your perception of what meritless means?
We understand the first part of the Federal Circuit's test to require zero merit or frivolousness, which is what the district court she used interchangeably, objectively baseless and frivolousness. So we think frivolousness is too low of a standard under 285.
So would you say without substantial merit? I mean, if we're playing around with words again.
Without substantial merit, unreasonably weak, or low likelihood of success, I think those are all ways of getting to the same point, which is something less than zero merit will satisfy under 285.
You have several objections, I take it, to what the Federal Circuit has said. One is that you think objectively baseless is too low, correct?
Yes.
You also don't think bad faith is necessary.
Agreed.
And do you also believe that litigation misconduct taken in conjunction with a case that is, let's say, of little merit, but perhaps not as low as the standard that you have, that you're suggesting, would justify an award of fees?
Yes, we believe litigation misconduct, especially in consideration with the weak case on the merit, makes for a strong
contender exception. Let's say I'm a district judge someplace, and I rarely get a patent case. How am I supposed to determine whether the case is exceptional if the standard is take everything into account, litigation misconduct, the strength of the case, any indication of bad faith, and decide whether it's exceptional. Exceptional compared to what? I have very little basis for comparison. How do I do that?
So I do not think it's a numerical comparison. I think when we're talking about an uncommon case, it's what would we expect of a reasonable litigant. So in the normal course, a plaintiff develops a product, they bring it to market, they get a patent, they're successful. A defendant recognizes the success, they look at the patent, and they try to design around, and a reasonable dispute ensues. So that's a normal case. What we're saying to a district court judge, the guidance we would give them, is that this litigant, this plaintiff, acted in unreasonable ways, and district court judges are called on every single day to make
those
determinations. Compared
to what? Compared to the types of cases that the district court hears on a more regular basis?
District courts
compared
handle
to patent cases?
I think all cases. Complex litigation requires litigants to act reasonably in procedural aspects and on the merits. I think.
See, this is what I find somewhat troubling about your take everything into account standard. Most district judges do not see a lot of patent cases. And when they see one, it's very unusual. So you've got these patent attorneys showing up in court. They're different from other attorneys. Sometimes they particularly if it's a very technical case, they speak a different language, they do things differently. The district judge is struggling to figure out how to handle the case. And then the one party wins, the other party loses, and the party that wins says, this was an exceptional case and you should award fees in my favor under 285. And the district judge says, how can I tell whether this is exceptional? If I had 25 patent cases, I could make some comparisons. But I don't have a basis for doing that. Now, the Federal Circuit has a basis for doing it.
Well, first of all, Congress has spoken and said that in exceptional cases, the district court should do this. And I think if you went back 10 to 15 years ago, perhaps the notion that district court judges haven't seen a lot of patent cases might be true. District court judges see lots and lots of patent cases. Many of those cases may not be decided on the merits. The only thing that the Federal Circuit sees are the ones that went to final conclusion. So I do think district court judges see a lot of patent litigation. I also think
— Is that really true? There are nearly 700 district judges in the country. If we had a statistic about the average number of patent cases that a district judge hears and receives in, let's say, a five-year period, what would it be?
I don't know what that number is, Your Honor. But I know that district court judges carry a widely varying docket of different areas of law and are called upon to learn the law and assess the reasonableness of those positions.
Mr. Telcher, it occurs to me that you really cannot answer the question of what adjective should be attached to meritless. And the reason you can't is, since it is a totality of the circumstances test, that is only one factor, and it doesn't have to be an absolute degree of meritlessness. Even in a — I assume you would say that even in a very close case, if there has been outrageous litigation abuse by the other side, the court would be able to say, my goodness, I've never seen lawyers behave like this. You're going to pay the attorney's fees for the other side. Couldn't the court do that?
That's absolutely correct, Your Honor.
So then how can we possibly define meritless? We can't, because it goes up and down. Even in a case where it's a close case, it could still be exceptional.
It's the degree of the unreasonable nature of the case as one factor.
Do you agree with the Solicitor General's test that fees are authorized when they're,
quoting, necessary to prevent gross injustice?
Yes, we do, Your Honor.
Well, I was surprised at that, because I would have thought your friend on the other side would say that. I mean, gross injustice sounds like a very tiny portion of cases, lower than meritless. I mean, it's injustice is bad, too. It doesn't mean you just lost, but there's something very unjust about it. Gross injustice, it's just some more adjectives. And it's the test, I gather, that's the test you adopt.
Well, it's certainly what Congress said in the legislative history and what was adopted by the courts.
Well, but you've been up here for several minutes and you haven't even used that adjective which is your test.
Section 285 is remedial, so certainly in order to remedy something, there must be some level of injustice. I think consistent with the notion that a case is exceptional and uncommon is the notion that it's gross injustice, not justice. And to my way of thinking, when somebody brings a very weak case, which we believe this one was, and it costs someone $2 million to defend it, and they go through that and they pay that price tag, a district court should be able to find that that is gross injustice. And I think it is, especially for many of the small businesses in this country when they face these types of suits.
Mr. Tosher, can I just ask very quickly the factors that you would think a court should consider? One is the degree to which the case is meritless. Another, I presume, is bad faith. Another is litigation misconduct. Is there anything else, or are those the three?
No, there's more. I think there's no exhaustive list, and for example, even in this case. And in Park and Theaters, where the court said other equitable considerations, we believe it is a totality of the circumstances, anything that bears on the gross injustice and the uncommon nature of the case. So, for example, in this case, the fact that ICON brought a patent that it, with all of its resources, couldn't commercialize was indisputably worthless. To this day, they've never made a product under this patent. That's a factor that bears on the equities of this case and the uncommon nature, and is one that doesn't fall neatly within those categories. The fact that our client licensed under a different patent that shows its linkage is another factor that shows that what they're asserting isn't reasonable. So I don't think there is a laundry list, but the categories that you identified are the big ones.
I think you did say, if it's an exceptional case, the district court must award fees, but the statute says may. So even in an exceptional case, according to the statute, the district court is not required to award fees. Or do you read may
certainly
something else?
There has been the issue of whether this determination is a one- or two-step finding. My belief is that district courts will look at all of the factors and make up their mind whether it's exceptional in that same step award fees. There has been the notion that first we determine a case is exceptional and then we make the determination of whether fees should be granted. I'm not sure once a court determines that a case is exceptional, what other factor would bear on that determination. If there are no other questions, I'd like to reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal.
Thank you, counsel.